Good evening, everybody. You're tuned to 103.2 Dublin City FM, and this is Europe Today, with your presenter for this week, John Bourne. Coming up on this week's programme, we have a very special interview with Dubliner Sean Stevens, a well-known local music impresario who happened to be in Paris last weekend when those awful and horrendous events took place. Sean will be giving us his harrowing account of what it was like being in the centre of Paris on that dreadful night the world will never forget. We'll also have a short rundown on some of the other stories of European interest that have made the headlines here in Ireland, and we'll have some music from France as well. So please stay tuned for the next half an hour to us here on 103.2 Dublin City FM for this very special edition of Europe Today. An EU grant of €5 million will help to put Dublin City University at the forefront of new research into tackling diabetes. The grant through the EU Horizon 2020 programme will fund what is known as the Dex Life Project. Dr. Donal O'Gorman from Bishopstown, County Cork, is leading the project at DCU, which is a part of a team of institutions across Europe looking at the problem. He says the objective of the project is to determine if persons are vulnerable to diabetes before it takes hold.
One of the major challenges we face is that with the increasing prevalence of diabetes, we can't adequately treat them economically in terms of the healthcare system. So we have to try and prevent people getting diabetes in the first instance. And in order to make that happen effectively, we need to identify them and characterise them earlier.
A Dublin woman has just landed one of the top jobs in the EU Commission. Karen Banks from Fox Rock will shortly take up the role of Deputy Director General of EU Legal Services after a career spanning 30 years in Brussels. Her area of expertise deals with state infringements of EU directives. Karen Banks says the European Commission is a world of opportunities and says anyone considering an EU career should spend time developing fluency in a foreign language.
In order to pass the competition to get in to the Commission, you have to pass one part of the exam in a language other than your own. So I think the most practical advice I could give them would be to spend time in France or Germany or whatever the country is that corresponds to people's second language, and really get a level of fluency in a second language. Now you can follow
Europe Today on the evening of Friday the 13th of November, a series of coordinated terrorist attacks consisting of mass shootings, suicide bombings and hostage taking occurred in various parts of Paris. Beginning at around 20 past 9 Central European time, there were three suicide bombings outside the Stade de France, along with mass shootings and another suicide bombing at four locations near central Paris. The deadliest attack was at the Bataclan Theatre, where the attackers took hostages before engaging in a standoff with the police. Dubliner Sean Stevens was in Paris with his girlfriend for what they thought would be a nice romantic break and an opportunity to see U2, who are scheduled to play Paris that weekend. It turned out to be a harrowing and dreadful experience for the couple, but Sean has kindly agreed to give us here at Europe Today an account of their time in Paris on a night that the world will never forget. Sean, thanks a million for taking the time out to talk to us here on Europe Today. Sean, I know this is a difficult sort of question for you to answer, but in your from your best recollection, can you sort of give us a rough idea of how you ended up in Paris and what happened on the Friday night and then the aftermath of the whole carnage and the whole mayhem that went on and your actual experience of the whole thing?
Yeah, absolutely, John. I suppose myself and my girlfriend Suzanne, we actually arrived in Paris on Thursday morning, and we spent the whole day kind of, you know, checking out places, the Eiffel Tower, pretty much doing the usual tourist thing. It was busy on the Thursday. It was plenty of tourists kind of milling around.
Yeah.
On the Friday, before the attacks actually happened, we went out to where the catacombs were. And we kind of, there was something amiss kind of when we were out that way, because weirdly enough, we were talking about the attacks that had happened in January.
Right, this was the Charlie Hebdo attacks and that time frame,
A lot of stencils along the walls in the area that we were, saying, Je suis Charlie.
Yeah.
So that's what made us kind of, we were chatting about what happened last January. Little did we know what was going to happen that evening.
And was there any sense of like an increased security presence on the streets or anything like that while you were wandering around? Did you notice anything unusual?
Well, actually, what we did actually notice on the way back into the city, because where the catacombs are, it's maybe a half an hour out outside the city. On the way back in, we actually noticed there was a couple of army guards outside the train station. Now, I don't know if that's normal over in Paris.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, no, we did actually kind of find that weird on the Friday evening. That would have been around, say, 4 or 5 o'clock.
Okay. And did anybody say why that sort of security was going on? Was that because of the match? Or, I mean, at that stage, it was just a friendly match that was going on. Was there any reason why? Did anybody think, was there a reason why there was that obvious visual security presence?
No, to be honest, like, when we look back at it now, you know, you don't know what to think.
But yeah,
at the time, we just noticed it because obviously it's an unusual thing. I suppose it's not every day the army are standing around in Dublin, so
it's
an unusual thing that we've seen in Paris. Looking back on it now, obviously with the match being on, maybe that was the reason why they
You wouldn't really expect the army to be around about where there's a friendly football match around, though, would you?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So
it was, okay.
And our plan was we were heading back into the city then,
right?
Which we did. We went up to Notre Dame. And then we had time to go out for a meal, which we did. So we were actually in the restaurant for about 2 hours. And that would have been around, time-wise, that would have been around between maybe 8:30 to 10:30, or maybe a little later.
Right, yeah.
And then afterwards, this is when, obviously, the Ireland match was on as well. But what we decided to do actually was go to a wine bar.
Right. Yeah. So you were watching the Ireland match.
Well, we'd hoped to watch the Ireland match, but because the France match was on, nowhere was actually showing it.
Okay. Right.
But every bar that we were walking by, I did kind of have a bit of a look in through the window to see if anyone was showing the Ireland match.
Yeah.
At that stage, I think that was come to the end of the end of the football. At that stage, there was nothing to miss. Everything was normal.
But the cafes, as you were walking by, they were still showing the French and German friendly match that was going on at that time. Was that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Even though there had been one explosion already outside the stadium, I think, wasn't there?
Yeah. I'm not too sure of the timeline of when when the explosion went up, but yeah, no, they were absolutely.
Yeah, and was there any sense of panic in the restaurants or any sense of concern or anything? Not at that stage. No, okay.
Not at that stage. It was actually only when we actually arrived at the wine bar that we were going to, that we were recommended to go to.
Right.
That we sat down. We had literally just ordered a bottle of wine, and my girlfriend, Suzanne, she actually got a missed call, or she was getting a call on her phone from my brother.
Right.
And I kind of dismissed it, told her just to kind of ignore it, because I just assumed he was ringing me to tell me that Ireland had won the football match against Bosnia. So that was my original thought. She kind of had a sneaking suspicion then that there was something unusual.
Right, okay.
And that's when I actually looked at my phone, and I had a good few text messages from friends and family members as well.
Okay.
And that's when the panic started to set in then.
Okay. But again, the evidence on the street at that stage, was there, was the other citizens around you, were they aware of the chaos that was going on, or were they as oblivious as you were at that stage?
They were completely oblivious. It was a weird thing. Or the weird thing was, everyone that was in the wine bar that we were in, they were all Parisians,
right?
And they were in it, and they were completely calm, kind of eerily calm, compared to the reaction that myself and Suzanne had given, to one another. Because at that stage, we were unsure what was actually happening. We were unsure, you know, where these attacks were happening and how far away you were.
Yeah. And how far away from it were you actually at that stage? Do you know?
I think we were around 15 minutes away.
Okay, right,
so,
okay.
No, it is relatively close, I suppose, to what actually was happening.
Yeah, and so then was there evidence then of sort of all hell breaking loose at one stage, or what way did that go down?
No, it was to be honest, it was still calm in the restaurant. And to be honest, I spent a lot of the time kind of trying to figure out what was actually going on.
Right.
And I did find it unusual that nobody in the restaurant seemed to be panicking.
Everyone really? Okay.
Chatting away to one another.
Yeah.
But what I actually noticed was that each person in the restaurant, they were literally just chatting away to each other, and nobody was looking at their phone.
Really?
And there was no TV in the wine bar, so nobody actually knew what was going on.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It was actually only there was two girls sitting behind us. One was from Australia, and the other one was from America. And they still hadn't realised what was going on. And then one of them actually looked at their phone and realised that somebody had been ringing her numerous times.
Yeah.
And that's when Suzanne actually went over and talked to them to tell them what had kind of happened. And then all of a sudden, it was like a domino effect. Everybody in the restaurant started to find out what had happened and what was going on.
Right.
And that's when the panic kind of started to set in.
What was your initial reaction yourself? What were you thinking? Were you going to think, oh, we better go back to the hotel, we better stay where we are, or what was going on?
Well, the plan was, because we literally just did not know how close these attacks were happening.
Of course,
what was going on. Like, we were obviously getting text messages saying, oh, there's people running around parachuting people.
Yeah.
So you don't know where it's actually happening.
Yeah, of course.
What we actually did was we stayed in the restaurant.
Of course.
Or in the wine bar for, to be honest, it seemed like
forever. Yeah.
I don't know actually how quick it actually was. And then once everyone in the bar had realised, everyone kind of started to realise at the same time.
Right.
And then that's when the doors were shut in the wine bar.
Right, okay. So the staff started to take sort of security precautions at that stage.
Yeah, absolutely. The second they all realised, and we could kind of see each person's reaction once they were finding out. And it was one of kind of fear, I suppose.
Absolutely,
Once the manager of the bar realised, they literally dimmed the lights and told everyone that they were closing.
Right. Well, they weren't throwing people out on the street, were they?
Well, this is the mad thing. So they were calling people taxis, or they were basically telling people that they kind of had to leave.
Really?
But that was even more panicky then, I suppose.
Yeah.
But they were kind of keeping watch out on the streets and sussing things out.
Yeah.
So people were leaving one by one then.
And was there any sort of official coordination of people? Was there police cars flying around, army flying around, or?
All you could hear, and to be honest, I'm still hearing the noise ringing.
Really?
Sirens all night Friday.
Right.
And
that was that roughly, was that, I mean, did this all sort of happen in around about the same time as you began to find out in the restaurant all of a sudden? That's what I'm saying. It's sort of like all hell broke loose within a couple of minutes of even though you'd already got texts and you'd already got some information, but all of a sudden just all hell broke loose with the sirens going off all over the place and the restaurant deciding to close and all that. What time of night was that at?
If memory serves me, I'm going to say around 11:30.
Okay.
It would have been later, but it was definitely around that time of the night.
Okay, But from the time that you actually got the initial text from your brother to the time that the surgeons and all that, what was the sort of time frame? I know it's difficult, it probably felt like an eternity, but do you remember what the time frame was? Was it a couple of minutes or was it half an hour? Or?
To be honest, it was a couple of minutes. Kind
really?
Of
okay, yeah, yeah. But it felt like an eternity.
It felt like a long time. And then once we decided that we had to leave the restaurant, it was the panic of, right, we had to go back to our apartment. We were staying in an Airbnb, so we weren't in a hotel or anything.
Yeah.
Because we were in an Airbnb, we had to get back to the apartment kind of ASAP.
And that must have been very difficult as well with all the chaos going on with the sirens.
Yeah.
And a short little trip in a taxi, how did that go?
Yeah.
Or did you walk? No. You didn't walk back, did you?
We had to walk back.
Really?
Yeah, there was literally, if taxis were going by, they were already full. There was people literally running around the streets, not knowing what to do. We literally had to run from corner to corner and kind of suss out the surroundings. Because, as I said earlier on, we just did not know, who was out on the streets, what was actually happening. And so we did have that fear in our head that there was someone out there with a gun. And we obviously didn't know what could happen, so we literally spent about 15 minutes running back to the running back to the apartment.
Okay.
Luckily, we made it back.
But as far as you were concerned, you could have been running into danger rather than run away from
it. It was literally that kind of fear of the unknown. And, you know, I have to admit, and Suzanne, my girlfriend, she'd probably say the same thing.
And you were a big lad, Sean. You wouldn't scare it easily, yeah?
I wouldn't scare it easily, but I have to admit I was.
Bricking yourself.
Kind of, you know, uneasy, I'll say, uneasy. I'm going to run back to the apartment.
And again, with the general sort of, the general populace of the city, what was going on? Were people running around all over the place, like, heard them, scared them, or?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there were people running left, right, and centre. Nobody.
There was obvious chaos in essentially, yeah.
Oh yeah, obvious chaos and, you know, obvious panic as well.
Yeah, okay.
You know, especially like with us two being over there, like we're tourists basically in the city.
Yeah.
We could have taken the wrong turn.
Yeah. And throughout all this, was there any sign of the gendarme or the local police or army or? Were they manning? What way was that walking?
You could hear all the
you sirens, could hear, yeah, right. Yeah, but you didn't actually see.
They all seemed to be going the same direction.
Right, okay. Yeah.
They were all going by us.
Right.
There was no cars kind of going one way and then going the next. Right. They were literally all in the same direction.
Well, I suppose that was may have been sort of subliminally a sort of an indication that you were, if you saw the trucks going one way and you were going the other way, so at least you might have known that you weren't heading into it. But again, nobody was to know what was going on. So it was planned at different parts of Paris. So nobody really knew at that stage where the actual focus of the attacks were or anything like that. So it obviously was very, very, very difficult. And this went on then for what? Just a couple of hours? Or how long did it take you to get from the restaurant to the Airbnb?
Once we left the restaurant, it took us, we literally ran the whole way. And it did take about 15 minutes to get back.
Right.
And then once we were back, we were actually staying on the first floor. But in the apartment, there were big open windows. So we literally just spent the next, I think it was 4 or 5 hours, sitting in the dark, trying to get as much information as on what had happened.
Right. And the people, there was obviously other people in the house at that stage as well, was there? Where you were staying, or was there...
Yeah, I think in the other floors there were people up there.
Right, but nobody was interacting with each other.
No. Right. There was a girl when we got to the front door. There was a girl outside. She was physically she was crying.
Right.
And we asked, was she okay? And she had literally panicking because where the attacks were happening. That's where she was from.
Oh, right.
And she didn't know what to do or where to go. So we basically, she was able to contact a friend and then she was able to luckily get in a taxi and kind of head to the friend's house. But she was, physically shaken from obviously the fear of trying to, or not knowing what to do because obviously it was happening where she was living.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. And when did it all start to settle down then?
To be honest, I think we were... we were kind of wide awake the whole night. It was very uneasy to try and go to sleep.
And the sirens and the movement and all that was going on.
That was
the whole night long, was it?
We nearly left. Like, we left on eventually on Sunday evening, but all night Friday night the sirens were constantly going. And the same on Saturday morning. We probably didn't get a sleep till about I'd say around 4:30 Paris time. So that was nearly a good 6 hours after. After we found out what was happening.
Right, and had you got access to a TV or a computer or anything like that at the time, or was it just...
No, literally all we had were our phones, and obviously we were texting people and letting them know that we were okay, and then obviously people were texting us as well.
Right.
And of course, there was, people were being very helpful, they were sending us the embassy numbers and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But our main concern was just to basically let everyone know
that you were okay.
That we were okay.
Yeah. And so then on Saturday, you were due to go to U2. The gig was on in Paris. The U2 gig was on in Paris on the Saturday. So that obviously, that got cancelled. Is that right?
We found out that was cancelled. We, to be honest, at the time, we weren't really thinking, obviously, about the U2 gig the day after. But I think it got cancelled pretty much straight away. And they released a statement at 2:30 in the morning over there.
Right.
To say that it was going to be cancelled. So, obviously, we were kind of happy they were safe and sound, so it wasn't really that much of a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, the plan was on Saturday evening to go to U2, and they were meant to be doing two nights, Saturday and Sunday, which were both cancelled.
Right.
But Saturday morning, after we got up, we weren't too sure whether to kind of stay in Paris or try to fly home.
Yeah.
We made the decision to stay for the extra day or two.
Right, but obviously you weren't going to be moving around much, were you?
Well, we hadn't planned on doing that, but right. We decided, you know, kind of late Saturday morning, we were kind of looking out the windows, kind of trying to gauge what the situation
right.
was.
Yeah.
And there were people kind of walking around and you know, moving around. There was a couple of cafes that had been opened the previous days that were there. They were all shut down. So
right.
We weren't too sure if places were going to be open or if people were going to be out.
Yeah. Okay. And I believe also when you were coming home as well, it was quite dramatic. Your flight home as well, you had a bit of a scare as well on the way back as well. Is that right?
Oh, John, I think that was... You could literally write a book about the weekend, to be honest. It was going from bad to worse at certain stages. Yeah,
so you decided to come back home on... Your trip was due... You were officially due to come back home on the Monday, was that right?
Yeah, Monday. We were meant to come back last night, so...
Yeah, so you decided to come back home on the Sunday instead,
yeah.
Is that right? Well, and how did that work with your flights and all that? How, were the airlines accommodating or how did that go?
We were flying back with Ryanair. And we'd actually contacted them on the Saturday morning because...
Yeah.
At that stage, we weren't too sure whether we were going to try to get back on the Saturday night. But eventually, we got in contact with them and they offered us the flight, change our flight for free
okay.
on Saturday evening.
Right, very good.
But by the time we confirmed everything, the flight had basically booked
right,
out.
Okay.
So they moved it to the Sunday evening. So we just accepted that to go home on the Sunday.
Okay, right. Well, at this stage, your flight was actually due on the Monday.
Yeah, Monday night.
So you switched your flight to the Sunday. So tell us what happened then when you were coming home.
Oh, stop. We got on the plane. Flew back to Dublin, literally, I'd say about 20 metres from the runway in Dublin Airport, and all of a sudden the wind took a turn for the worst and basically put the plane, blew the plane sideways.
Really?
And eventually the pilot had to fly back up into the sky, and we're so close to landing home, and panic started setting in again. We basically flew back up into the sky, did a couple of twirls. Twirls probably not the best word, a couple of loops, and then ended up being diverted down to Shannon.
Okay, right.
And we were down there for a good while, John, to be honest. We were down there for 3 hours on the runway. There was nobody in the airport. So they basically just waited for the winds to die down. And yeah, after 3 hours, it flew us back to Dublin.
Okay, yeah.
Home.
Yeah. And was it a situation where the plane had it gone into, you know, the usual with the masks dropping down and all this type of thing, or was
no,
it? Had you to assume the crash positions, or how did that go?
We did not, to be honest. It was literally the plane just went straight back up, and at that stage, we were this cannot be happening.
Right. And was there panic on the plane as well? Was there panic?
Yeah, absolutely. There was people getting sick and everything down the back.
Right.
And, you know, there was no food or water on the plane either, which was a bit of a nightmare.
Right.
Considering that we had to stay there for 3 hours down in Shannon. But, it was just literally bad weather. Caused us not to land on time.
Okay. Sean, listen, again, it's quite a harrowing story. We're delighted that yourself and your girlfriend, Suzanne, have come home unscathed. Unfortunately, there's been a lot of families who weren't as lucky as yours, and our thoughts and our prayers go to the members of those people's families that have been killed and very seriously injured in the atrocity. But for the moment, anyway, Sean, thanks a million for taking the time out to talk to us here on Europe Today. And delighted that you made it back in one piece.
Yeah. Cheers, John. Really appreciate it. Ébloui par la nuit.
That was the wonderful French singer Zaz with a track called La Pluie Balanie. Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for this week's folks. And again, I want to say an extra special thank you for Sean Stevens for sharing his account of the events that happened on that dreadful Friday the 13th of November night in Paris. There will be a podcast of this evening's programme up on our website, europetoday.ie, if you want to check that out. Join us again here on 103.2 Dublin City FM at the same time next week and your programme Europe Today.